Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast. The season has arrived. The Milwaukee Bucks are getting prepared now for the 2021-22 NBA season as defending champions. Tuesday night, Pfizer Forum, the Milwaukee Bucks welcome the Brooklyn Nets minus Kyrie Irving, which is an interesting thing that we will, of course, talk about here on this edition of the podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast, and on the other line, as always, is Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He will be there Tuesday night. I will be there Tuesday night as we check out the Milwaukee Bucks opening up this season. They'll get their rings. It's going to be a big ceremony. The Brooklyn Nets, the team that the Bucks beat in a thrilling seven-game Eastern Conference semifinals, will be in town. We've got a few things to chat about today as we get ready for the new season. Jim, we'll start there. We'll start with ring night. It's going to be a pretty big ceremony, a pretty cool celebration. I still feel like there are people who haven't even caught their breath after the Bucks won the championship. Very quick turnaround here to get back on schedule, the regular NBA schedule for the start of this season with late October basketball. Kyrie Irving isn't going to be there, we know, but of course the Brooklyn Nets are still one of the top contenders for the Eastern Conference title, right there with the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't imagine that this game will be on the court treated as anything more than just, you know, a regular game, maybe some extra rest for guys who are still trying to bounce back, but it's going to be pretty cool with the rings and everything. What are you looking forward to as we head into this season opener?
Yeah, it is. It starts for real. Think about JR. These guys haven't played a linear 82 game season in three seasons. It's that's something. But yeah, I think they're all really interested in what it's going to feel like. They're definitely excited to see the rings. They want to experience that, and it's hard to describe, JR, like the look in Brook Lopez's face or Drew Holiday's face when the idea of ring night is brought up. Like, so I want to impress upon the fans that way, like, these guys are really excited about it. And then they have to play the Brooklyn Nets like a half hour later. So they also realize that if they sort of live in that moment too long, like, Kevin Durant's gonna dunk on their head. So it's a really interesting kind of headspace they're in, because like Giannis said, he's like, I don't know. He's like, maybe I'm gonna cry. He's like, maybe I'm gonna cry just tears of joy. He's like, I don't know. Maybe he's like, maybe I'll be so focused on the game that the ceremony's kind of, which I don't believe. Like, Giannis, I think, wears his emotions on his sleeve. Like, I don't think he's going to miss that moment, right, for himself. I think it's going to be a cool thing, for the fans. I think the banner, probably more than anything, I mean, I'm sure they'll show a big jumbotron of the ring, but, like, the banner, to me, JR, is more of the fan gift, if you will, right? Watch party on the Deer District. You know, the Bucks are really telling fans to be like lined up, ready to get in at 5, to be in their seats at 5:45 when the ring ceremony starts. Cause I think they're just going to blow through it. It's 9 guys. It's the coaching staff, owners, you know, whatever that is. I think they're just going to go. Right. So I'm looking forward to it. I've never seen one, you know, I'm really curious to see what that is, what that feels like. Cause I will give this to the Bucks. They know how to throw a party. So, you know, it should be a lot of fun.
And weather should be pretty good on Tuesday. And that's key, because they're planning on having a bunch of people out at the Deer District. Speaking of that party throwing the skill that the Bucks had, they're going to have a lot of people outside in the Deer District checking out that game. You know, obviously, the first game of the season, it's hard to draw any conclusions, so I know we're not going to be able to come away from that game really having a vibe as to whether or not the Bucks are truly better than the Brooklyn Nets. But this Kyrie situation has really, I think, probably dropped Brooklyn from the peg of the very top team that you're looking at as the championship favorite here for 2022. We originally thought that Kyrie was going to be able to play in road games, but the franchise ultimately decided, because he's unwilling to get vaccinated and thus is not going to be within protocol to play in games in Brooklyn. The team is just saying, you know what, don't be around, don't practice, don't come on the road. Well, I shouldn't say don't come on the road. I think he might be physically there in some spaces. I'm not actually sure, but he's not going to be playing until further notice. And it appears this is a cause that he's willing to go to bat for, to the point that he's not going to play. I think that when you look at the East, you look at Brooklyn and Philadelphia, and you think, yeah, those two teams are super, super talented, maybe more talented than the Bucks. But the thing that stands in the way is, I would say, a chemistry thing. You know, the Ben Simmons situation in Philadelphia, remarkably not fully resolved. I can't believe Ben Simmons is still in Philadelphia. And then you've got kind of, you know, some interesting personalities in Brooklyn, and Kyrie chief among them. I would say that, you know, I would say that you don't want to hang your hopes on other teams kind of having problems, like chemistry wise, as being a reason why your team might rise to the forefront, because those types of things, I think, kind of come and go. But they've been kind of constant enough with these guys that I would say you've got to give the Bucks the edge. And you look around at national writers, a lot of people think the Bucks are the favorite to repeat in 2022, which is different from how I thought it was going to be viewed. I thought some of these teams would be ranked ahead of them. But I actually think this first game is going to be a really interesting litmus test. Like, are they better than a Kyrie-less Brooklyn Nets team? Because the Bucks are seen right now, you look at 538, in some cases they're really seen as the favorite to repeat in 2022. This has caught me off guard. I don't know how you feel about it.
Well, first of all, they've I think earned that right. You know, we're talking about PJ Tucker and Bryn Forbes leaving, and while, you know, PJ Tucker is sort of a playoff icon, I mean, it's the core, the guys who mostly matter are back. And yeah, the Irving thing is I'm curious sort of what people's long-term thoughts are on that. I mean, I'm not going to go too far down the wormhole, but there's a new mayoral race in New York. I mean, he could be back on the court as soon as an election, you know, we don't know. If the laws are changed or mandates are changed. So I, in full disclosure, I picked the Brooklyn Nets to go to the finals. I still think they're the better team if both teams are 100% healthy. And when I make season predictions, that is how I make them. And that's without Kyrie Irving. They just in a lot of ways are a bad matchup for the Bucks. And then you throw in sort of some of the additions they made their second year together, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the Bucks have the same benefits. I mean, Jrue Holiday, think about it, JR, like, no camp last year, kind of learning a new role, playing off the ball, starts to hit his stride, gets COVID-19, he's out. And then he didn't have long COVID, but he admitted it stuck with him for a while. So now you got Jrue Holiday for a full season, right, with no learning curve. So I think the Bucks feel good about it. In terms of winning the East, sure, they have every ability to. And of course, I think the East, the winner of the East is going to win the NBA title. That's what I thought last year. So I think that is the case this year. So yeah, I think it's Brooklyn, the Bucks, and then to your point of Philadelphia, I think whatever's going on there is going to knock them down a peg. You know, even if Embiid returns to be healthy again, that seems untenable. And then if Ben Simmons is traded, are they as good? Probably not. I mean, does Buddy Hield put that? Maybe. I don't know. But at least for now, JR, I think the two that, are set apart a little bit. And now whatever happens opening night is, you're right, that's, you know, whatever, right? That's kind of what that is. Of course, the Bucks are going to want to win, and the Nets are going to try to spoil the night. But for the most part, it is about May and June, and I expect it to be these two teams.
Well, it's game over if Giannis has a jump shot, which is sort of the elusive white whale that the Milwaukee Bucks. I think after watching them win a championship, there wouldn't be clamoring for that to happen anymore. Like, it's just never going to happen. It's fine. They won a title with Giannis. Who cares if he can hit jump shots? But in this preseason, Jim, we have seen him expand his game a little bit. He's looking like Kareem out there with some of those spin moves, some like skyhook type things going on. And he's hitting shots from beyond the arc, from inside the arc. You've gotten to see this team play in the preseason. What are you seeing? Like, is it a market improvement enough that you would say, yeah, there might be something to that? Or is it just, I mean, obviously we're talking about a really small sample, so I don't know if anybody's getting too crazy about it. It's preseason after all. But what are you seeing? What, I guess, overall, too, what have your observations been from these preseason games?
Yeah, it's one. I'm definitely surprised at how sharp he looked. He didn't practice full court 5-on-5 until just 12 days ago, or 13 days ago, excuse me. And yet he comes in and plays these preseason games and barely misses anything. That's kind of incredible if you think about it. And especially the fact that while he did work, I don't think he worked out as hard as he normally does as he's recovering from that knee injury. So although I'm not surprised by it, JR, because we spoke about this a few times last year. We saw this a few times last year. The 49-point effort against Brooklyn, you know, handful of threes, kind of those jumpers. We saw it a lot in the finals. You know, I think for Giannis, it's about the day-to-day with this. It's the consistency. And that's what he said after that effort against the Nets, you know, where he said, this is the player I want to be. I think he hit four threes and a couple, you know, mid-rangers. And he made his free throws. So if this happens, it's probably a leap to say he's turned the corner. He'll do this out of, you know, 75 out of the 82 potential games. But even if he does it for like 65 games or 60, like that's more than he'd ever done it before. And you're talking about a third MVP, a scoring title, and, you know, maybe the Bucks win in 66 games. I mean, I think he's in line for a real special season, JR, provided his knees stay healthy. And is it the jump shot? Yeah, it's part of it. But I think it's not so much that he has it. It's that it goes in more regularly. Because there were still those games last year. JR, you remember this. There were still those games last year where we did a pod and you're like, why is Giannis shooting threes? Because he went 0-for-7. Like, if he's 3-for-6 or 2-for-6 as opposed to 0-for-7, like, that's a big deal in a single game. And then you extrapolate it out, you know, 72% free throw shooter. He's scoring 35 points a game, not JR, with like no extra shots. And that's scary if you're the rest of the NBA.
Yeah, that was the number one thing people were freaking out about during those game blogs in the postseason. Why is Giannis shooting threes? Like, he can't shoot them now. He could experiment during the regular season, but that's over. You got to shoot them now. And, you know, at the time, it was like, I don't know. You might be right. 0-for-7 in this spot is not good. But, you know, it all does look like it's leading toward this big, long play of yeah, just sharpening that part of his game. And you're right. If he's a 35-point-a-game guy, it's – how do you beat the Bucks? I mean, I guess for me, the reason I don't see 66 games, 66 wins as tenable is it's not just Giannis. You're still relying heavily on guys who are, you know, in their 30s. Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton, guys who went and played, you know, in the Olympics after on a short turnaround season. I just refuse to believe that those guys, I mean, they could maybe stay healthy, but I don't know if you're pushing those guys until late stages in the season. And maybe that's just, I don't know, maybe that's overcautious, but this is not a young roster. Brook Lopez, throw him in there too. This is not a young roster. So I guess I don't imagine that if this team finds itself in a comfortable playoff position, that they're going to ultimately put their foot on the gas to try and win as many games as humanly possible.
Yeah, no, I mean, I threw that number out there just saying, yeah. if he was at that level. No, I think, even this first game, I mean, Mike Budenholzer might have to really be stringent with his, or I don't know what the right word is, with these guys. If there's a minutes workload, to open the season, which he'll never say if there is until there is, you know, for all you daily fantasy people out there, get out of my mentions with that. He doesn't talk about it, but you know, the opening night will be tough because of the emotion. But you're right, JR. I don't think, first of all, last year proved to them that they don't have to go as hard every regular season game. Giannis said as much just the other day, actually. He's like, that's one of the biggest things I learned. He's like, I was 100% guy every practice, every game, no matter what. And then he goes, and he tried to find that line to say, he's like, it's not that I don't care. He's like, I want to win the game we're playing, but I realize it doesn't matter. And that's that fine line for NBA guys that I think sometimes can even drive like the casual fan up crazy, right? Because they go to the one game against the Knicks and then, like, you know, Sam Merrill starts like that. You know, so that's the hard part of the NBA schedule. But to your point, I do think there is going to be some mindfulness for the big, let's just call Brooke Lopez the big four. I mean, look, George Hill's 35. So it's not even like, you know, those guys get a break and George Hill's going to play 37 minutes. Like, you don't want that either. So there's this is going to be a new thing for a lot of those Bucks players in terms of that. But I still think they're good enough where even if they're playing 32 minutes, like, they could still beat most of the teams on their schedule.
Shout out to Sam Merrill, who made the Memphis Grizzlies roster at the expense of Chris Dunn, a top flight draft pick. He was waived. Sam Merrill's there. Of course, he was sent away in the offseason for Bucks fans who maybe didn't pay quite as close enough attention in the offseason. Part of that deal that brought Grayson Allen to Milwaukee, correct? Do I have my deals mixed up?
Nope, yes, that was the one.
Sam Merrill, a Memphis Grizzly, could maybe he'll take a leap forward. That'll be interesting. Speaking, though, of this roster, it's going to be a little shorthanded to start with. Shemi Ojeleye and Bobby Portis will not be ready to start the season. What's your understanding of their situation? How soon they'll be? Shemi Ojeleye, we obviously haven't seen play in a regular season game as a member of the Milwaukee Bucks before. I think we're all kind of curious to see his role, especially on defense. But what is sort of your understanding of their situation? How long they'll be out?
Yeah, so Shemi Ojeleye, you know, he's been out essentially since the very start of training camp. You know, we saw him on the court September 28th. That was the day after media day, the first practice we could see. Then they had like an off day and an individual day. So somewhere in there, he got hurt with a calf strain. And, you know, this is 3 weeks later. So I'm thinking back to like the PJ Tucker calf situation when he first was acquired from the Bucks. It's soft tissue. I think the Bucks in general are more conservative with that kind of thing. So I hesitate to put any kind of timeline on that because A, we haven't seen him doing any work on the side at practice in the little bit we get to see. Mike Budenholzer says he's not doing anything. So who knows? I think Shemi is definitely a TBD and see you when we see it. Now, Bobby Portis, he pulled that hamstring during this Bucks scrimmage. I believe that was October 3rd. He started to do some individual work. Saw him shooting after practice before the preseason game in Brooklyn. He was getting some shots up after practice on Sunday. JR did a little bit of I guess faux cutting lateral work. It was not hard though. Like an assistant coach was dribbling kind of, you know, in crisscrosses and he was kind of flipping his hips, but it was not a like, you know, get down in the stance and slide type of situation. So I think he's still a little bit away. And what that means is your big men are Brooke Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo. And so to piggyback, off that the minutes and lineup stuff, I mean, they're going to get really creative with small ball because it's Sandro. Sandro's it. I mean, he's on a two-way, but I think at 6'9", I don't think the Bucks have a choice other than to have him available for them. Meaning he may be dressing as soon as his opening night.
Yeah. Are we calling him Sandro or are we going to do Mamu as they did in college?
I think on the pod, I'm cool being less formal with like just saying Giannis. But I rarely go with nicknames. You can call him whatever you choose to call him. I tend to avoid nicknames.
I love Mamu. I love it. Sandro Mascavelli. Mamascavelli. Even since I think I know I could say it correctly, it's still a work in progress. But we're gonna see some Mamu in the early going. I love it. We haven't talked since the extension to John Horst was announced. That information dropped last week. It's hard to, you know, it's not a surprise necessarily, other than it did just kind of drop out of the blue, a little Woj bomb, mini Woj bomb. But after you win a title, that's the sort of thing that happens. GM contracts tend to be a little bit more opaque than what you see, certainly from players and maybe even coaches in some respects. Mike Budenholzer got an extension. John Horst got an extension. The Bucks are pretty committed to this leadership team. It was not apparent. And I mean, that's obvious if we're talking about Budenholzer during the playoff run. It wasn't apparent that Mike Budenholzer was always going to be the coach this season if that season had ended at an earlier stage in the postseason. And I don't know if it's clear John Horst would have still been here. It seems like it would have been an opportunity to sort of change things over completely if things had gone south. They obviously did not go south. So I don't know if there's any, I don't know, anything really interesting to say about it. John Horst deserves to be here for longer. The guy has been everything they could have hoped for when he was sort of a, I would say, not surprise hire, but an eyebrow-raising hire as the new GM a few years back. The dude's had just a tremendous run of, you know, track record of success here. So I imagine this did not catch you all that far off guard.
No. Especially once Budenholzer was extended. And I think the way the last contract extensions worked for both men, you know, this would have been Mike Budenholzer's last season on his last contract. Next year would have been John Horst. So while they haven't said terms to anyone, I would imagine it's the same setup. I'm sure the GM's contract maybe runs a year longer than the head coach's. He earned it. Look, he had a very short list of things to accomplish after winning the executive of the year and getting his first contract extension in 18-19. And that was keep Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee. And that was done. And then next on the list was build a roster that could compete and win for a title. Check that box. So you're right, JR. Now he's in waters that not too many GMs really ever get to. And that's playing in the luxury tax, and that's real money. And I understand the fan point of view of you're like, wait a minute, there are four billionaires that have majority stakes in the Bucks, but usually billionaires don't become that by just writing $40 million checks in taxes. I mean, just Google billionaires in taxes. And that's not a thing they like to do, even if this is like fantasy land, because that money isn't a fantasy for them. That's actual, like if you want to be, kind of old school about it, like literally taking out their personal checkbook and writing it to Adam Silver. Like that's what that is. So John Horst has never been in that situation. So we'll see. As long as you have Giannis entering his prime, you are going to be in really, really good shape to compete for a championship. Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday are in a contract for a couple years. I don't see, you know, provided they stay healthy, I don't see like a precipitous decline happening. So yeah, John Horst has earned every right to try to, you know, win more championships with this core. And I think it's not a surprise that they all kind of run concurrently to a degree. Like, you know, if Giannis is gone in 4 years, then everybody's gone in 4 years. You know, like it's just, I think that kind of makes sense to a degree, right? So, it's he's earned it. And I personally like some of the moves that he was able to make in limited fashion. If Dante DiVincenzo comes back, that bolsters the team, you know, even more. Congrats to him. And, you know, those are the spoils of victory new money.
Yeah, man. A couple more questions. Then we're going to get to a couple new features that we're debuting. And I think people who listen to this podcast are really going to enjoy this. But a couple questions before we get there. Why am I going to love Yorgos Kalatsakis?
Oh, I think Bucks fans have come to embrace good defense, at least in my opinion. I mean, it's all they ever hear about, so why not love the thing that the team loves? And I think the kid can defend.
Like Stockholm Syndrome or right. Something. You will love the defense. Right. Yes, of course.
Right. You know, and, I think Packers fans want to see Aaron Rodgers throw five touchdowns. You know, I think Bucks fans might be okay with a pitcher's duel every now and then. Yorgos is, if and when he plays and develops, I think what they hope is he's that rangy defender. Look, I mean, he blocked a James Harden step back three. That's not an easy thing to do. And that's him doing it, really not knowing what he's doing.
I want to see that on ring night. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
maybe not.
Yeah, so I think he's intriguing in that way. If he plays, it's going to be in these games, you know, where the starters sit and all that stuff. So I think what you're hoping to see is a guy who's going to attack the basket and really defend. The shot, I think, is going to take a little time. But, look, he's 6'8". So he can defend, and I think Mike Boonholzer likes the way he can attack the basket. And just go back to that Brooklyn game, people, I guess if you want to see it. I mean, he took Bruce Brown to the paint. You know, Kevin Durant hit him in the throat, and he still went through. I mean, he's been a pro since he was 16 years old. So I don't think he's going to be phased. But if he sticks around, and I think he will, those are some things at least immediately Bucks fans can maybe say, okay, he's in. This is what we're going to get from him.
All right, so this next question is a little bit, has nothing to do with the Bucks roster, the Bucks radio, actually. And it's a little speculative on my part. Ted Davis, the Bucks radio voice for 26 seasons, I think it's 26, might be 24, I'm getting numbers confused, but he's been there for close to a quarter century, one way or another. He will not be on the microphone for the start of this season. He has announced that he is stepping away, retiring, and the Bucks announced Dave Kane, guy who used to do radio play-by-play for the Virginia Cavaliers, actually, called their NCAA championship run. He is now the Bucks play-by-play voice. You can hear him on 620 WTMJ radio when the season gets going. Ted Davis, though, is not there anymore. It's a little different. Jim Paschke also had retired. He was, of course, the play-by-play voice for the for TV. Kind of had a cool send off. You know, we knew it was coming. He's going to be master of ceremonies at ring night, so he'll be back, which is kind of a cool thing. It's a little different though with Ted Davis. He hasn't really given any interviews, hasn't talked a lot about it. Why he decided to step away. The few comments he's made make sense. You know, they reached the top of the mountain. It was probably he decided maybe ready for something new in his career, but it's notable. And to me, it very speaks volumes that we're not hearing much about it and that he hasn't really said a whole lot about it. It tells me that it either wasn't his call or the Bucks, you know, decided to move on and there's some financial incentive for him to not say anything about it. I don't know. Again, I'm speculating, but it seems clear in my mind that this wasn't necessarily Ted Davis's idea. And I've been thinking a lot about this, that this might actually be, if ownership decided to go in a new direction, this probably is as good a time as any because they do get sort of a fresh start, clean slate, having won a championship. Ted Davis did get to call moments that I think a lot of sports fans will remember as some of the fondest in their lifetime watching Wisconsin sports. So that's a pretty cool thing. You know, on the other hand, it's going to be jarring when the guy who's been the voice of this team for a quarter century isn't on the microphone as fans, you know, with their renewed enthusiasm for the Milwaukee Bucks get going, ready for a new season. I think it's an interesting move, and I don't know how you feel about it. Ownership, if that's who made this call or, you know, team personnel, that's their prerogative. It's their team. They can do what they want with it. But I'm a little bummed out about that. I'm not going to lie. I've grown to love Ted Davis over the years. You know, he is the enthusiastic. He's a non-traditional, I would say, radio voice, which I've really grown to appreciate as voices become more and more sort of by the book. Cookie cutter is probably too strong. But, you know, there's sort of a down-the-middle professional approach to radio now. And Ted Davis was a little bit outside of that, and I really appreciated that. And he's not going to be here anymore, and I get the feeling it maybe wasn't completely his idea. So I'm bummed out about that. What are your thoughts on this whole situation?
I know he announced his retirement. He does have a talk show in town. But you're right. In terms of actually speaking about it, all that we know, and these are things he has said and tweeted, so I'm not speaking out of school with this. You know, he wasn't at the parade and sounded, from what I understand, not thrilled about that as he was broadcasting his show, while the parade was going on, when Jim Paschke and Zora Stevenson were at the Bucks golf outing, something I was at to see Brandon Jennings. They got to hold the Larry O'Brien Trophy for the first time. And Ted had some tweets about that, like, hey, good for you guys, like, always wondered what that looked like. And so, you know, something to that degree that intimated, okay, he hasn't been around this thing. I don't know if he'll be there Tuesday night. My guess is he won't be. Jim Paschke is emceeing the event. It is strange, especially after such a long run. I mean, Jim Paschke is an employee of the team, and Ted Davis was not. And I don't know if that's the simple delineation there, JR. You know, radio stations make the decisions they make. I'm sure the Bucks have a lot of input into who calls their games, but I don't think, you know, they have any sort of stake in WTMJ. You know, I think that's good karma broadcasting. And, you know, Bally Sports Wisconsin, I think, is, you know, the Bucks have a whatever regional sports network stake in that, right? So, and again, maybe it's just as simple as that, and I don't know. But yeah, after many, many years of the same two men calling the games, after a title for them both to be gone it will be jarring, I think, especially for on the radio side where Dave really, the timing, I mean, I think Tuesday night might be the first game he calls.
Yeah.
You know, so that it's kind of like a real, you know, sharp kind of turn back. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. You know, I don't know how championship rings are delivered. I would think, you know, those guys should get one. I guess we'll find out if one of them doesn't. I guess that's the next thing. But you're right. I can imagine if you're especially a long, long time Bucks fan that, the voices you literally grew up with for decades and decades are no longer there.
And we haven't even talked about Lisa Byington taking over for Jim Paschke. It'll be cool to you know, sort of a new era for her. And I don't want to detract from the coolness of it is to have a female full-time play-by-play announcer. She was the first. She was not the only now. The Philadelphia 76ers, I believe, also hiring a woman to do play-by-play for their television broadcast. I think it's awesome. It is a little souring, and you make a good point. I shouldn't assume that the Bucks are driving the bus on this. It's a little different. When we're not talking about team employees, it's different. I'm sure the Bucks have plenty of say, but yeah. But yeah, you're right. I shouldn't assume that there's a huge involvement there necessarily with the Bucks. But yeah, like I said, I mean there were a lot of bad years of Bucks basketball, and Ted Davis's enthusiasm is infectious. Like it definitely comes through the radio, and when you know you're trying to care about a team that, you know, is a middling, maybe an eighth seed type of team, you like having somebody with that level of depth of knowledge and that, you know, just somebody who's, you know, been riding around in my car with me for 20 years. So,
right.
We will see what happens there. So speaking of that long history, we've got a new feature, two new features, but the first one I want to debut sort of celebrates the middle period. We talked a lot about the 1971 Bucks during this championship run, the 50th anniversary of it. Of course, the 2021 Bucks are champions again, but there's a lot of history in between, some of which is not so good. But, you know, for those of you who are like me, who like to sit around playing the random, you know, random Bucks players game or random Brewers players games or Packers for that matter, where people just start naming players that had sort of quality roles on bad teams or, you know, just players that you might remember. But it's something I enjoy doing. Inexplicably, many dudes my age enjoy it. I don't know why, but wanted to do something called, we're calling this segment One Quick Buck, where we celebrate Bucks from that 50-year in-between period. These are not players who are on the 71 team or the 2021 team. These are not players who are really all-stars. It's not going to be Ray Allen or Glenn Robinson or some of the more familiar names. Sam Cassell, even. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about everybody else. So here we are debuting One Quick Buck.
Desmond Mason with authority. Man.
Monte Ellis puts it up at the buzzer and got it.
No way.
Monte Ellis wins the game. And heads to the locker room.
You gotta be kidding me, Charlie Villanueva. He has got the mojo going.
To the bell, man. In your face, Brad Lojas.
The Milwaukee Bucks select Larry Sanders from Virginia Commonwealth University. Larry is not here.
One Quick Buck.
The first player that I today with one quick buck, we'll give you just some information about a player. And the player I have chosen today, Jim, is Andrew Lang. If I say the name Andrew Lang, what do you think? Do you think anything?
I think... I don't know who that is.
I thought that might be the case. Andrew Lang, as a Bucks player, is tied to one specific incident. It involves a player who's not on the Bucks. It involves Patrick Ewing. Because in 1997, it's the 97-98 season, Andrew Lang goes up to break up an alley-oop from Charlie Ward to Patrick Ewing. They're playing the Knicks. It's at the Bradley Center. And Andrew Lang basically... kind of shoves Patrick Ewing. It wasn't like super intentional. Ewing falls, hurts his wrist. He's never the same. He was never an all-star after that. It was basically looked at by a lot of Knicks fans as the end of Patrick Ewing's functional career, wow. All-star career. And it's fascinating because of what has happened to him since then. Now, Andrew Lang, I'll get some background. He played for the Bucks from 96 to 98, just two seasons. But he did start all 52 games that he played in the 96-97 season before he had his own Achilles injury. So he was a starter, starting center, drafted by the Suns with the 20th pick in 1988. Great shot blocker. He's still top 100 all-time in the NBA shot blocking. He's 80th. He's actually just ahead of Andrew Bogut and Irvin Johnson, a couple other Bucks. He's one behind Bob Lanier. Who was a Buck, of course, his number, he hangs in the rafters where the championship banner is about to hang out here. And, but he was only with Milwaukee for two seasons, but there is this moment where he goes up and hurts, Patrick Ewing gets hurt. What's interesting is that Andrew Lang then became a New York Knicks player. He became Patrick Ewing's backup in New York. They had lockers side by side, actually. And now today, and he's been doing this for a long time since 2005, I think. Andrew Lang is the team chaplain for the Atlanta Hawks. Of course, the team the Bucks just beat in the Eastern Conference Finals. He's an ordained minister. Apparently, had a very good relationship with Marvin Williams, who came over to the Bucks a couple years ago. Obviously, a longtime Atlanta Hawk. But yeah, he can do everything. He can marry you. He can perform any sacrament. He's got all the certification you need for this sort of thing. He's not a full time employee of the Hawks, but he is the team chaplain and has been for a long time. So he is still in basketball. The other thing Bucks fans might know him for is his involvement. How he came to the Bucks. He was involved in a draft day trade. Bucks drafted Stephon Marbury. Ray Allen went one pick later to the Timberwolves. The teams swapped their picks. The Bucks also got a future first-round pick with Ray Allen, which they 2 weeks later gave back to the Timberwolves in exchange for Andrew Lang. So Andrew Lang came from Minnesota, became their starting center, was their starting center for a year before he got hurt. He was a backup in his second season. So the Bucks got Ray Allen out of that deal. That worked out great. Andrew Lang kind of came along for the ride. So that is the debut as we celebrate the random Bucks in Bucks history. One quick buck. What do you think, Jim?
I've got one addendum to that, JR.
Tell
which
me.
Is fascinating.
Bring it.
So Basketball Reference tracks the history of every draft pick.
Yes.
So Andrew Lang, how he got to Milwaukee actually began in 1987 when the Golden State Warriors traded a second round pick to the Milwaukee Bucks for head coach Don Nelson.
No way. Are you serious?
I am serious. That draft pick that the Golden State Warriors traded a second-round pick in 1988 for Don Nelson, all those years later, ended up being one of the draft picks used to get Andrew Lang.
That is indeed wild. The Warriors made out pretty good in that exchange.
Oh,
I
my
think.
God.
Don Nelson was very good.
I love this game. I love this. Yeah, that's fascinating. Awesome. I never knew who he was. I knew, like, as a Bulls fan growing up, I remember the Patrick Ewing wrist injury, and he always had that, like, the white. That's fascinating. That's a really good start.
Back
in the Wayback Machine.
University of Arkansas. A lot of University of Arkansas guys, Bobby Portis among them, who have some Bucks history. There's another guy that I'm thinking about for next week. So that'll be your teaser for next week's one quick buck. But now let's get to my new favorite new segment, and that is something we're stealing from your past, which you can explain. What's making Jim angry? This has nothing to do with basketball. Well, it might have something to do with basketball. I don't know, but give us the background of this because I love this idea, and we are gonna have a lot of fun with this, Jim.
Yeah. So I was on a podcast at our sister paper in Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Inquirer, when I was covering the Bengals. And basically my fellow beat writer, Paul Daner Jr., realized after traveling with me that I was just not a happy person generally in the hours between waking up and like 1 p.m. And then, you know, I would like complain about stuff and be mad about stuff kind of all day long. And he just thought I was so ridiculous. And he was like, what? So it was like, what's making you mad today? You know? And then I'd have this like rant, which usually had something to do with traffic, or just whatever. And it, so it became this thing, what's Jake making Jim mad, making me angry. And it's kind of become a thing. Like I actually, JR, just like, he had me on for Bengals Packers just to relive this and like, okay, it's been 4 years. What have you been mad about? You know? So I do. I am angry all the time, JR. It's true.
Yes. And weaponizing your grumpiness is definitely one of the best ideas you've ever had, even if you're borrowing it from someplace else. So let's do this. Without further ado, week one, ring ceremony is about to kick off. The season's about to get going. Everybody's in a good mood. But what's making Jim angry this week?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder!
I'm upset.
Say it louder!
I'm upset.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Charlotte.
Charlotte, yeah. The city of Charlotte, yeah, or like Charlotte. An old flame.
Specifically the airport.
Oh, Charlotte.
Like I'm not. And here's the thing. Like Charlotte is the worst airport in the country. The city might be fine, but it's called Charlotte, JR. And like the idea of getting on airplanes and having to spend so much time running through Charlotte. That's the thing, JR. You cannot. I have never seen anyone just saunter through Charlotte. Like
everyone's on the move.
It is. You land at gate A1. Your connection is at gate Z77 in 17 minutes.
Why?
Like, well, I don't know. And it's just like it is. You book the flight and you can't because, you know, this is the other thing. You can't go anywhere direct unless you fly to O'Hare. Right. Like it. So you're always routing through Charlotte or Atlanta, but Charlotte specifically, like the Bucks go on their first road trip, and before I could go to Miami, I gotta go to Charlotte. Right
now, is this similar to the Detroit airport, which I don't know how it was built, if it was just added on a bunch, but it's just basically one long hallway. Is that what's going on with Charlotte?
No, it's just you know, there's branches and terminals and you gotta like run through and it winds around. I mean, it's huge, and that's the problem, because it's you can never land and then just get on your connection. Like, first of all, they make you go there, which is bad enough, and then and then you gotta like run around. And okay, and here's the other thing that's really, I got two things to share that's really bothering me. So I don't understand like why we don't talk about aliens more.
Whoa, we took a sharp left turn. We were just in Charlotte.
Like what, was it just the pandemic? Like, to me, I think if we're stuck in our house, like aliens should have been a bigger discussion. Like,
I love this. I agree with you. The UFO thing is pretty staggering. The military is straight up like, we don't know what those flying things are. We have no explanation for that.
Like, think about it. Our whole, like, I'm 40 years old. My whole childhood and my 20s, it was people who said they saw UFOs. TV shows were made about it. Like, these people were ostracized and made fun of and whatever. And, you know, these great natural wonders or civilizations that were just wiped from the planet for no reason. And it was all this. And then all of a sudden, they're like, eh. Yo, by the way, that stuff, totally real, totally exists, and no one seems to care.
It's true. It does feel like we kind of just yada yada some of this stuff while we were dealing with problems on Earth. Not now, aliens. We have our own stuff to deal with. Are you familiar with the movie Ad Astra?
No.
Okay, so it's a space movie. It came out a couple years ago. Brad Pitt is in it. He's very sad and quiet and understated through the whole thing. Tommy Lee Jones plays his dad. I'm not even going to go into it. I'm not even going to bother trying not to spoil this for you, because no one out there is going to see it if they have not already. But kind of, it's sort of dealing with the the frustration of they have this outpost on Neptune and they're trying to find intelligent life and they don't like they put this signal out everywhere and they simply cannot find it. And I like the takeaway for me from that is like, that's kind of how it is now. Like, why haven't we seen this yet? Like, why haven't we seen actual, why haven't we made contact with anybody from another world? There's so many stars and so many planets. Some of them have to have technology. There have to be people out there or organisms out there with technology capable of getting to us. What is taking so long? And the fact of the matter is probably because Occam's razor tells you there may not be anything out there, at least not within, you know, driving distance. So it was kind of like, it is kind of a bummer that we haven't like just hung out with aliens yet or like got an actual confirmation.
Well, they're hanging out with us. I think there is confirmation because they do live and everybody's seen around. I mean, let's be real, Jack.
Oh, like, you think they're among us?
Oh, yeah. Why would you be flying around and not like land somewhere or like, you know,
good point.
Do whatever it is you're doing. That's and also, why would you want to talk to us? Because we're pretty awful. So
I mean, if we can't fly to them, they must think we're like ants.
Yeah. So,
you know,
I mean, that's the thing. Like just the fact that that was it, you know what? I bet you they invented Charlotte.
they invented what?
Charlotte.
Charlotte? Yes, to confuse us, keep us, you know, to keep us running the rat race. They found ways to make our lives more difficult. Fascinating. I did not know you were an alien person. We will definitely have more offline conversations about this. But that is our debut of What's Making Jim Angry this week. What are we calling it? What's Making Jim Mad? That sounds more succinct. Let's do that.
That works.
What's Making Jim Mad? hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you enjoyed the start of the 2021-22 NBA basketball season. Bucks Nets. That is a Tuesday night. First, what is that, a 6:30 tip off at Pfizer Forum?
Yeah, weird tip with the ring ceremony. So, yeah, but it'll be fun.
Get there early so you can check out the ring ceremony, the banner, all that. It's gonna be a great time, and we will talk about that as well as we're gonna try to get at you on a regular basis, hopefully every Tuesday this year, and during the regular season anyway. And we will have more to say next time. Jim, any last thoughts before I let you go?
No, be sure to the Milwaukee Bucks newsletter from jsonline.com is now out. So if you want to get your Bucks news via email, via newsletter form, that's now available for you this season. Go over there. You can sign in. I've just tweeted it. Of course, if you want to celebrate ring night with a family friend, buy the Journal Sentinel book. It's a commemorative championship edition. It's pretty cool. That's special. And of course, if you're listening to this, but you don't subscribe to what we do, jsonline.com/deal, give us a shout. We'll take you through the first few months for only a dollar, I want to say, JR. And you'll get everything JR, myself, Ben Steele, Lori Nickel will write about the Bucks.
Not to mention everything else we got in the journal, including Packers coverage. Good time of the year to be a Packers person right now. They're 5-1, Jim. So yes, that's jsonline.com/deal. And that commemorative book, you can find that on jsonline.com. Check out the Bucks page. Lots of stuff from Jim, Lori Nickel, Ben Steele. Great stuff in that book. It's beautiful. The photos are beautiful. If you don't want to let go of that championship season, like I don't, I'm still thinking about it. I'm still thinking about the Valley Oop and the block in game four. That stuff is still very much top of mind for me. So check that out and check everything out that we have at jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Jim. We will chat with you again next week.
Talk to you then.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think of the new features while you're at it. You can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. You can find him at Jim Ozarski. That's Ozarski. And we will chat with you again next week. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.